What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
How good does it get, SK?
Why not ask, Troy?
Today, live from the Pinecrest Inn, it's The Smiley Show. So long, everybody.
This is The Smiley Show.
It is Sunday night here in Augusta, Georgia, and we are crowning a Masters champion. For the first time since Tiger Woods, we have a back-to-back champion, Rory McIlroy. Lots to unpack in terms of his career legacy. Just seeing some tweets now from Luke Donald that tying Seve with two green jackets is going to mean a lot to him. He's undoubtedly the best European golfer of all time. Smiley, we'll go big picture later on in this show. But, man, what a Sunday at Augusta. And one that it did not seem clear-cut who was going to come out with the win today. There were a lot of different challengers in the mix. And I just want to start unpacking the story of the day with you, because we had Scottie Scheffler, who made this huge surge back yesterday with 65, opens up 2-under through 3, gets to 9-under. Rory 3-putts for double after missing the green at 4. He drops 2 shots off that lead. Justin Rose birdies 7, 8, 9, gets to 12-under. When Rory's at 9-under and you're seeing all these other guys surge, I mean, how do you think this day is going to unfold at that point in time?
You know, coming off of last year's Masters and how dramatic it was, you felt like there was going to be twists and turns the entire day, especially with the amount of players that were in contention. Rory McIlroy, I think after that double bogey at 4, it felt like we were being set up for another crazy day of Sunday, whether Rory was going to be a part of the story and win his second green jacket, or whether a Cam Young type was going to make a run, or Justin Rose, like you had mentioned. But at the beginning of the day, seeing Scottie Scheffler get off to that amazing start, that birdie at 1, that shot he hit, felt like it was going to be a special day for Scottie. And then Sam Burns getting into some trouble at 2. And I think just trying to like wrap your head around that front nine and the amount of possibilities, it felt like it was almost information overload. I don't know if you felt the same way, because when Rory made that double bogey, then your mind starts to go to all these different possibilities of who's going to win the tournament. And it wasn't until I felt like when Cam Young made the bogey at 6, because he looked rock solid those first 5 holes, misses a shortish putt at 6. But to me, Cam Young kind of opened the door for Rory. I thought the 2-shot swing at 7, especially for that final pairing, was the biggest moment of that front nine outside of the 3-putt double for Rory. When Cam Young hits the fairway at 7, that becomes, you know, if you give him 10 golf balls, he's getting it within 10 feet. I would say to that funnel pin, 9 out of 10 times. I don't know how many golf balls it would take for him to miss the green like he did. That was an inexcusable shot by Cam in that moment. I felt that Cam was going to have to show us wedge play down the stretch for him to win this tournament. And in a key moment at the beginning of the front nine, when he has all the control and looking for a bounce back birdie, hits it in the front bunker, hits it on the green, misses a putt for bogey, Rory makes birdie. And that seemed like all of a sudden Rory now was in the driver's seat, and then Justin Rose heads the back nine. So that's where I'll kind of leave just my overall initial impressions of the beginning of the day.
I think we were all sitting here watching it. We really felt like, is Justin Rose gonna get the one he deserves? I mean, three runner-up finishes here. Today's tied for third is, I believe, his fifth top five. It is his fifth top five in Masters history in 21 starts. And a guy that just seems to not only know how to play around Augusta National, probably more than most, as we know, experience being so important around here, but a guy who was in form to start the year, the huge win at the Farmers, you know, is gaining ball speed even at the age of 45 and feeling like, okay, we saw him make a charge back, seemingly impervious to pressure, you know, a guy who's been great at Ryder Cups, but man, aim in corner, does him in. I mean, he goes 2-over in 3 holes there, but really gives away 3 shots because he hits the green in 2 at 13.
Yep.
and three putts. But I think all of us were thinking it starts with that approach at 11 where he kind of bails out right, leaves himself a really tough up and down that he cannot convert, makes bogey there. And then a duff chip at 12. I mean, I'm not saying that's an easy up and down at 12, but to make back-to-back bogeys there. And then you loved his tee shot at 13. Hits a beautiful approach on the green. And I mean, to me, it felt like if he is, because he enters that stretch 12 under, and he could easily emerge 13 under instead of 10 under. And then for someone who is a leaderboard watcher like Rory, that's something you're thinking about with every single shot you're hitting. I'm, as we continue to unpack today, that's the next piece, right? Like, how did a guy with Justin Rose's sort of competitive profile not give this one away, but not convert this one to the position he was on 11T?
It's the Masters on a Sunday.
it's fair.
And Augusta National requires you to hit the shots. And sometimes executing on a Sunday is difficult. And Justin Rose was doing such a great job on the front nine, leaving himself in the proper position, starting a day with a chip in at one, but really leaving it in a perfect spot on nine. And once he made that putt walking over to 10 and smashed a mini driver over the corner, hits the top of the hill at 11. It's a shot that nobody was necessarily getting it close. That middle left hole location at 11, you would have been okay, you know, hitting it out to 40 feet. So the fact that Justin stepped up there, and most of the time when you miss right at 11, the ball comes out shorter because you either mishit it, you weren't committed to it. So I don't know if he ever had the right club in his hands. The fact that it scooted on down past to the right of the bunker, where that chip, I've stood there, it's a very, very difficult chip. A couple guys got it up and down. There is some room. Rosie actually hit a really nice one and just missed the putt.
Well, and I mean, that's about as far as you can take that shot, right? That first shot there at 11. I mean, any further, you're flirting with hitting it too far and rolling into the water on the other side.
The chip shot? Yeah, the chip shot. I mean, it's a defensive one, right?
You like the lead there, right?
Well, of course. You know, if you get it over the bunker first and foremost, and then just keep it on the green, because if you chip it in the water, you're either hitting the same shot again or you're going to the drop zone, which is both short-sided again. So you're – the amount of pressure that these players are under in – some, like, he should have just not put himself there. And as the bottom line, if he hits it on the green, it could be a completely different day. And I think from there, after that second shot, you know, Rosie typically has this look about him, right? That he's so resilient. He's never going to give up. He's going to dig things out when things are tough. But after that second shot at 11, it kind of got him out of that frame of mind that we're accustomed to. You'll never see him hit a pitch like he hit at the 12th hole. And you just wonder if, you know, he just wasn't quite there mentally with that concentration that he normally is able to take to a degree that nobody else is. So that was very surprising at 11 and 12 with him. Of course, wasn't expecting that.
Well, and then right about the time that he three putts, I'm not sure of the exact time, but as we watched on the broadcast, when he three putts at 15, or I'm sorry, at 13, is when Rory is standing at the tee at 12. And just talk about that tee shot, like 161 yards, 9-iron, a pin on the right side of that green that we most often see guys who are trying to play it safe on Sunday hit the center of the green and be okay with just trying to two-putt it from there. We've seen Rory, after two amazing days on Thursday and Friday to start the week in terms of strokes gained approach, had an off day on Saturday, and then the open of Sunday also looked a little bit shaky. So what went into that shot for Rory there and what he does to step up there and hit it tight? I mean, it was pretty incredible.
You know, I think so many Masters champions have a moment. And oftentimes that moment is on Amen Corner. You can think of plenty of past champions, whether it be Phil Mickelson hitting the shot out of the pine straw at 13.
Yeah.
You think of Tiger Woods hitting the green when everybody else falters short. And today, on a hole where the Golden Bell had the most difficult hole location on this green, everybody knows it. Everybody knows the shot that you have to play. And Rory didn't hit the shot that Jack Nicklaus would recommend or Tiger Woods would recommend, hitting it over the middle of the bunker. He hit a shot that I would say is the least comfortable to him. Something that is a knockdown, a little left or right shot. I would call it maybe a shot that he gets inside of 10 feet one out of 10 times. Not to say that Rory can't hit the shot, but in that moment, especially yesterday, watching him hit a pitching wedge long left to the easiest hole location on that green, the right flag, short irons, never been a good setup for Rory, but he hit the shot of the day. The proximity at the 12th hole today was 41 feet 9 inches, and Rory hits one inside of 8 feet. And in that moment, that was the shot that got him control of the golf tournament. And you can't give him enough credit for not only hitting that shot, but then also getting up to 13 and hitting his best drive, I think, of the entire week. So it's just moments around Amen Corner mm-hmm. that you can point to who was able to step up and hit the shots and who didn't. Cam Young was hitting the shots. He just had a day with the putter, just never cooperated.
He couldn't buy one on the back all the way down to like that lip out on, it was a long putt, but that lip out on 16 where he's not necessarily, you mentioned the approach shot on 7 and he got into trouble, you know, a couple times off the tee. 9 mm-hmm. was one of those spots, and then catches a bad break at 9 as his punch out ends up in a divot. But it was really, it's not necessarily that he looked like he rolled it bad. He just couldn't, you know, they weren't falling for him the way they were earlier in the week.
It's hard to back up a really low round. We talked about it last night. I was worried that Scottie Scheffler was going to not have enough to get over the finish line, and that Cam Young, it's, you know, when days are going, everything's going right. There was even moments on Saturday where Cam Young's just getting good breaks. It's how you end up with a 65. Balls that should be in the woods, they end up in the fairway.
Ball kicking out. Yeah, there were a couple ones like that. And I want to talk about each of these players individually, just like, what does this mean for them? But, you know, we're still kind of working through Sunday, and it's about this time where now there's another entrant into this race. And it's Scottie Scheffler out of nowhere. I mean, we had him left for dead.
Not nowhere, but.
Well, I mean, I'd say we should. Friday, many people wrote him off, right? He was even par, right? I think he was 70, 74 to open. Makes the cut, of course, but everyone thinks he's miles off. Then goes out, posts a 765 on Saturday. So he's within 4 shots of the lead entering the day. Not completely dead, but he amazing par saves on 6 and 7. Wouldn't have even been in this position without long putts made there. And then we did raccoon time, a very different type of raccoon time on the show here last night. Scotty did a little bit of raccoon time on 15 because he hits that drive way right. He hits a nice punch out, but eclipses the last tree on his sort of intended line, falls back down the pine straw, hits that third shot to about 20 feet, and then makes that birdie up the hill. At that point, it gets him to 10 under, tied for second, then hits it to about, you know, maybe 10, 12 feet on 16, makes that birdie to get to 11 under and solo second. You know, how, I mean, of course, we know Scottie Scheffler was alive. Of course, we thought he was in play. But just, I'm curious, you know, your thoughts on just how much of a factor he was going to become. I think you even had a number in mind for him. If he gets here, he either wins outright or is in a playoff.
I thought he needed to get to 13 to win, and it turned out that would have been enough to not only win, but win by one of Rory. I mean, these are all hypotheticals, of course, but what Scotty, I feel that he missed out on, and I'm curious, I didn't really get a great feel for what happened at 13. So Scotty Scheffler hits the fairway and lays up, and I just don't know what happened. I don't know if we can maybe have Jackson during our record doing a little bit of investigative research of why Scottie Scheffler wasn't able to go for it in 2 at 13. The day prior on 13, he had some abnormal playing conditions on his golf ball. And today you wonder, did it happen again? Because it looked like he was in a place where he could go for it. I don't know why he didn't. And he laid up, and he laid up too close, ends up making par at 13. And 15 was obviously a bizarre situation where he tries to punch out on the layup and then has, it looks like nothing to the green, goes up over a tree, somehow lands it on the front of the green out of the rough, keeps it on the green, and then makes the birdie putt. And I want to talk about how great this shot was because we have two comparisons here. And maybe the wind had picked up fractionally more for Cam Young, but Cam Young had 7-iron into this same green. Scottie Scheffler hit 8-iron. And Scotty somehow holds the green and keeps it 20 feet short of the hole out of the rough. And Cam Young lands a 7-iron on the front of the green. It rolls over the green.
Yeah.
And so I just haven't like wrapped my brain around what happened there. Like how, like the differences of bounces on 15 hasn't computed for me because Rory's ball looks like it's going to land and spin back in the water. Meanwhile, Scotty somehow having a golf ball come down like on a baby's bottom and that's soft. Nothing added up for me there.
That's the first place my head went is you talk a lot about Scotty's ability to control ball flight and change trajectory and change like landing angle being one of his, you know, superpowers, right? And that's the only thing it could be, right? Just given how firm 13, but especially 15 greens were this week. And golly, that might have saved Rory. Because as we kind of keep playing out the day, that one of 15, yeah. if it's soccer, it comes back. We're talking about that shot, that wedge shot of 15 being comparable to the one on 13 on Sunday last year, where he ends up making double, and maybe we're in a playoff right now. But I mean, you know, for him, for Sky to hit that shot and make that putt, and then, man, great drive at 17. We think he's got a chance. Almost makes that long putt at 17.
I think you got to go back to 16, man. That touch.
Oh.
The touch at 16 and 17. You know, when he misses the greens at both of those situations.
Are you talking? No, Scotty hit the green at 16.
Sorry, I thought we were on Rory. My bad. I thought you got
it. Oh. Wait, sorry. I was drinking water. okay, take it either any way you want to go.
What you got? You got something for me, Jax?
Well, just that shot on 13 you were asking about. He had 288 to the pin after on his second shot. And
he had 288?
Yeah. I don't
hold the phone. Yeah. That can't be right.
Can you look and see on what 13? He did with his – do you have a video of his drive there just to see if it
– Yeah, let's do some investigative reporting because he's in the fairway.
Yeah, he's in the middle of the fairway.
Okay, after some investigative reporting, Charlie, I just called Justin Kutcher, who I worked inside Amen Corner with on Amazon Prime this week, and I said, all right, Justin, why did Scottie Scheffler not go for it into Jackson tells us he was 288. Was the number right? Okay, so Justin has told us that he hit his tee ball to the right, hits a tree, comes back into the fairway, was too far away, was forced to lay up. So that answers our question on 13. It wasn't an abnormal playing condition with the golf ball. He was just too far back and needed to lay up. And then now I would argue that the layup was improper. I thought
too close.
You can hear Scotty in the clip of him laying it up. He said that ball needs a hook. You know, he's trying to get the ball down to the left side of the fairway. Because if you're going to push it up in that 60 to 70 yard range, it needs to be left. It needed to be where Rory McIlroy played that shot from last year, where he hit it in the water, but he didn't have an angle. He was too much on the downslope, and he had a really good wedge shot, but he was too close with a bad angle. If he would have taken that same line on the layup, he needed to be probably about 15 to 20 yards further back so that he could get spin on the golf ball.
And so then at that point in time, that's 13. So this is actually really rewinding quite a bit, but we recapped how, you know, he makes birdie at 15, makes birdie at 16, has a good look at 17, and then sort of an uncharacteristic approach at 18. We're thinking maybe he can hit one tight, you know, make a birdie, get to, at that point,
putt at 17, man.
Putt was right there on the front doorstep. I do think it's interesting, and we can maybe get into this as we kind of do some bigger unpacking, but, you know, all this talk about where is his approach game, you know, is he off in some way, shape, or form this week? He was eighth off the tee this week and third in approach in terms of strokes gained. So good, you know, obviously you don't finish tied for second in the Masters without strong showings both those places, but good to see him, you know, playing well thereafter. We talked quite a bit about what was different there this year relative to previous years.
What did I say when he got to 15?
You said if he gets to 13, he wins a tournament.
I told you he was going to get to 13.
Yeah, yeah.
And when that ball was rolling towards the hole at 17, I cannot believe it missed. But there was just a slight Rays Creek pull to that putt that brought it, that just did not allow it to stay, to hang in there straight. And stripes a tee ball at 18. And he was kind of dumbfounded a little bit with his second shot. You don't typically see Scotty not give himself an opportunity to get to 12. And it felt so important. And that a two-shot lead is so much larger coming down the stretch versus somebody that posts that gets to 12. I think Rory was able to handle the nerves great. But gosh, applauding Scotty for hanging tough at even par, having a very, you know, remember this Friday round that he had, that was Friday morning. That's when the golf course was soft. When players got off the course, they were like, wow, surprised how soft and slow the greens were. Like, he was the only guy that shot over par in the top 30 of the leaderboard. And he shot two over. Just it's wild how just a stretch of holes for Scotty, cold putter on Friday, was the ultimate reason why that he was just too far back. He was an incredible weekend, bogey-free weekend. But
yeah,
just shocking that
first time since 1942, I believe.
Yeah, at the Masters. Just shocking that the Friday morning round was the reason why he didn't end up getting another green jacket
when it was at its most scoreable I mean, it's really interesting. I think, and then as we come down the stretch with Rory, because once we see Scotty, you know, posting 11, that's a number in the clubhouse. And we see Rory go long at 16 and hit an incredible putt there from off the green to make a par there, to not drop a shot. You know, that was definitely in question. Par at 17. And then what are you thinking when he's standing on that tee at 18, set up for a cut?
When he set up for that cut, I said, oh boy. I thought he was just going to play the shot that he played at 17, that real low driver shot, which has been a huge asset to him. Which was really, first off, I was really impressed that he found the fairway at 17. I would have taken the no that on bullet. Fairway hit at 17, but he set up for that big fade, and man, oh man, did the golf swing not listen to him? And it was very, very fortunate. You know, I've caught some very bad breaks right of 18. You end up underneath that magnolia tree, and you're forced to have to pitch out. And you know, if Rory's having to play his third shot from 150 yards. Gosh, six is in play. So catching a break to where he could get the golf ball up around the green and getting it into that greenside bunker felt like the tournament was on ice.
Yeah, and then as soon as he gets that out, two putt to bogey, drop a shot, but win by a shot at 12 under. The next portion of the show, we should unpack career legacy, do some follow-up on some of the movers on Sunday, kind of play it forward a little bit. But we have producer extraordinaire Jackson Brown in the house, who is put a little call to action out. Got some questions from all of our followers out on social media. Jax, what do you got for us to get going with these?
Yeah, a little bit diverting from what you guys are talking about here. But what was most impressive about Colin Morikawa's performance this week?
Okay, the stat of the week. If you'd have told me that Colin Morikawa was going to lead the Masters in strokes gained putting, I would have said, how many did he win by? I mean, we've been talking about his putting all year. It's like, is this guy ever going to figure out the flat stick? And boy, oh boy, did he. I mean, just an incredible performance, mental toughness, gained close to 3 strokes today with the putter. And he had a double bogey on the second hole today. He had 5 straight birdies on that back nine. And I said to you guys, I was like, if Colin Morikawa birdies 17 and 18 gets to 11 under, is he going to, like, how is he going to stay warm to be able to go play the playoff? It's like, this guy's back is about to give out on him. He looked like, Charlie after a full weekend of playing member guest match play, you know, like just the round robin and
without doing your mobility work.
No mobility work,
straight to the first tee, just crushing the dad back. Colin was asked about this after the round today. He said, it's going to be one of the best tournaments forever. I'm going to remember this one for many reasons, but just more how strong the mind is to be able to go out and convince yourself that everything is going to be okay. So that's Colin himself telling you how much of an effort it was for him. And we were sitting here watching Jax, the tee shot at 16 hobbling off the tee, and then the putt he makes for birdie and pulling out of the hole. But I think when you were starting the week with Colin, where there were some reports that on the range he was hitting driver, and he was not carrying it 280. That was the total yardage of some of the drives he was hitting, and playing practice rounds where he was not hitting tee balls at all, to go out and do this week. I think it really just speaks to, you know, we had this sort of down stretch of his career in a way where he won the majors and he was seen as one of the best ball strikers. And then there was like the weird year where he started drawing it instead of cutting it. And you know, you're sort of wondering, what's he going to make of this? But the fact now that he won at Pebble Beach this year, the putting stats are the putting stats this week. Once the back gets healthy, I think he's going to be a factor at all three of the remaining majors in 2026.
Love it. Got another one here. A little bit more lighthearted. Does Rory get the same green jacket, or does he get a new one?
Yes. It's the same. It's just the same jacket that they keep in that locker there.
I don't think they'll put like 6 jackets in your locker to win 6 Masters. I think it's the same jacket, but you just get to tell people you have 2 jackets.
That'd be pretty sick. Well, I read somewhere this week that like Gary Player is the only person who doesn't have his jacket on site. Oh. I guess they just make Gary players
maybe so
one of a kind.
So I actually got some things I want to get into a little bit more in depth from a statistical standpoint with Rory McIlroy.
We'll come back to more with Jax later.
So Rory hit the second least amount of fairways in the entire field of players that made the cut.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Yeah. But interesting enough, he still gained 4 strokes off of the tee and was 7th in that category. So when I start to think about how or why, is it a little bit of luck that went his way this week off the tee to, you know, to still miss fairways mm-hmm. and still be in a position that he's gaining off the tee? So how was he doing it? Well, I think he was doing it with length, right? When you're far enough up there and you avoid trees and you catch some breaks like you do on 18, that's where you catch a little bit of of slack a little bit when it comes to the statistics. But the other thing that Rory McIlroy did an incredible job of was his around the green. He led the field in the around the green stats. And heading into the week, we talked an awful lot about around the green. Who can chip and putt it around this place? I thought he did an incredible job on Thursday making timely putts. And really Thursday, Friday, I thought his putting was the big reason why he was had a 6-shot lead. The chipping was fantastic all week. Maybe catching some breaks here and there with the driver. Iron game had its moments. It was good enough when it needed to be. Was it the best iron performance of his career? No, but it was plenty good enough when it had to be.
Well, no, I think that's if you're looking at, again, the strokes gain stats, it's the by virtue of Rory's length, even when he's off the fairway, right, he's still going to have better strokes gain off the tee stats than others because your proximity to hole plays a huge role in like what your expected score is from that place, right? So that's to start. But it just, I mean, to me, the story is in the iron play. Like the first round, he's 5th strokes gain approach.
Yep.
Then he's 10th in the second round. And then he's the 2nd worst player in the field in the 3rd round. And then the 4th round, he manages to get it back to 15th in the field. And I agree with what you're saying about around the green putting. And really, he had below average putting rounds both on Saturday and Sunday. But it was just, and I think it played out even in, it was a story of almost 2 9s today for him on Sunday, where he just, that left pull miss with his irons and some of his short irons and wedges was still present.
Mm-hmm.
But then for me, it's like, it's that shot at 12 where he cannot, he's just pulled a less club. He hit 9 iron today, he hit pitching wedge yesterday to a shorter and easier pin. And that's got to be going through your head a little bit. You're trying to figure out the wind. You're spending time there with Harry Diamond trying to get it right. And you stand up there and you hit that 9 iron exactly the way you want it to and make a birdie. That's like the big turning point for me with you know, the approach play.
Statistically, it was Rory McIlroy's 2nd best iron shot of the week. The first best was the iron shot he hit at 16 early in the week when he got it rolling on that Friday round where he hit in there tight. But also interesting enough, outside of the drive, remember when he drove the green on the 3rd hole earlier in the week? That was technically his highest strokes gained off the tee value of the entire week. But guess what his 2nd best was? It was the drive today on 13. We talked about how important those 2 shots were of getting control of this golf tournament. The iron shot at 12, the drive at 13. I think it's statistically, when you look at the values, that is the amount that he was able to pick up on those shots, you know, gave him control.
So next, you want to talk about the Rory for the rest of this year or Rory career context? Because this is his 6th major win. And that's a conversation that's worth having. Where does he stack up against the greats? You heard the off the top of the show, Luke Donald's statement, a guy who carries a lot of weight, is maybe the best European Ryder Cup captain of all time, saying that he is now the greatest European player. Here's a list of other players that have 6 career major wins. Phil Mickelson, Nick Faldo, Lee Trevino, and none of those have a career slam. The list of the guys ahead of him in terms of total majors won, Arnold Palmer, Sam Snead, Gene Sarazen, Bobby Jones, and Harry Barden all have 7. Tom Watson has 8. Gary Player and Ben Hogan have 9. Walter Hagen has 11. Tiger has 15. And Jack has 18. But again, of that list, there are a number of others who do not have the career Grand Slam, as Rory does. The only career Slam winners are Gene Sarazen, Gary Player, Ben Hogan, Tiger Woods, and Jack Nicklaus. And so to me, it's man, I mean, we're really and it's what a wild pivot for that discussion where we're sitting here leading into the Masters last year. Like, man, it's been since 2014 since Rory won a major, and he's only got four career majors. And is this, you know, is this sort of potential lost, or is this ever going to happen for him again? Now we're sitting here, you know, a year later, he's won back-to-back Masters, could probably win the next three or four. This is something Freddie Couples said earlier in the week. And it's a completely different revitalization of a guy who's heading in, you know, not the twilight of his career, but he's in his late 30s, you know?
Well, yeah, the floodgates could be open. We talked about it at the end of the Masters last year. How many more majors can Rory McIlroy win? Can he get to a 10 number? Not out of the realm of possibility with the game that he has and the maturation of his game. What it comes to mind for me when you look at Rory McIlroy's major championship legacy and where he currently sits with six major championships, of course, joining Phil Mickelson. But where my head goes is, where does he stack up with the players that he's playing against now?
Mm-hmm.
And so Brooks Koepka being at five, Scottie Scheffler being at four, I think it's a race between who is the best player of this generation. And when you have Rory McIlroy, Scottie Scheffler, and Brooks Koepka kind of all neck and neck, of those three players, who's going to separate themselves to where they have the most majors at the end? And right now, Rory McIlroy is on a fast track to continue on getting past six, but you know Scottie Scheffler, his major number isn't done yet either. Could Brooks Koepka continue to win major championships? That's not out of the realm of possibility. But as of right now, I think it's fair to say that Rory McIlroy could very well be the best European player that's played the game at this point. You got Nick Faldo, of course, at that six number. He's moving on up.
I think the other interesting discussion there is we love to do this in media. I tried to do it to you on Friday and you batted me down, and I'm just going to keep trying. It's like, let's do some knee jerking here, right? Like, we know Scottie Scheffler was the world number one, but we just watched the performance that Rory put on. Maybe we would have felt a little bit differently about it if we were sitting here and he'd held that six shot lead and expanded it and won by, you know, 10 or something. But and then also there's a second piece of that, which is, when we initially discussed this, Scottie Scheffler was at even par and he was 12 shots off Rory McIlroy, and he made up 11 of those over the course of the rest of the week. But it is interesting just to think about, you know, where do we stand in our sort of feelings about who, maybe not necessarily the what the OWGR tells us, but who's the eye test best player in the world. And then we're going to go to Shinnecock in a couple months, where Scottie Scheffler is going to have the chance to complete the career Grand Slam and win his fifth major there. So Brooks Koepka is playing great golf now, and we think he could win, you know, later this year, maybe a regular event, maybe a major. So it's a great time for that debate. I wonder where you stand on Scottie versus Rory right now, on who you think is the better player, and maybe just a short-term vacuum.
I think they're clear ahead, number one and number two, best players in the world. We've been saying that for a long time now. This week kind of proves it. You have Cam Young, I think, is one of the best players up and coming, undoubtedly, with the start to the year that he's had, especially with the game that he has. And you got to remember, too, like, he hit the shots today.
He did.
You know, the shot that he hit on 12 right on top of Rory McIlroy inside of 10 feet was one of the best shots of the day. Outside of Rory's, and then also was you know, his ball striking was there, and it was good enough to win today. And if he wins, you're wondering, all right, how many majors can Cam Young win? But that's
another amazing narrative change too, right? From rewind this to August of last year, even more recent than Rory winning the Masters last year. You're talking about a guy with zero PGA Tour wins, hasn't played on a Ryder Cup team. And all these things have now happened where he wins the Wyndham, he plays incredibly at Bethpage Black, he goes and wins the Players, and he has a real chance to win today. I mean, I just feel like that's a guy that, and even having Dr. Brett McCabe on the show too, like, just Cam's mindset in these moments, I think there's really something to take a page out of, where just he just really stays even keel the entire way. And
I'm laughing right now at something. I'm so sorry. This official world golf ranking, I just wanted to see, is like, ooh, I wonder how close Rory McIlroy just got to Scottie Scheffler, and like, is he have a chance of passing him? Oh my gosh, I forgot how many points average Scottie Scheffler has. He has 15 point average. Rory McIlroy is at 8. Now he'll obviously get a big jump from winning the Masters. It's insane that he had a 7 point advantage heading into this. Like, I mean, it's wild just how big of a lead Scottie Scheffler has, and it'll keep that lead for quite some time. But, you know, if Rory McIlroy is able to win another major or a couple more big time events, he might close in on Scottie Scheffler as world number one. But a heck of a week seeing Scottie. I mean, anytime you have Rory McIlroy at one and Scottie Scheffler at two on the leaderboard, that's the stuff that gets me so excited watching the best battle it out.
But it was a weird flow to Sunday in a
way.
Like, there was just something about the fact. So Scottie Scheffler and Hao Tong Li tee off at 152, and Rory goes off with Cam Young, I believe, at 225 is the tee time. So there's like this separation there. I don't know how to describe it. Like, it was, if you look at the scoreboard and you look at even the finish, where it's not, you know, signed, sealed, and delivered on 18 with Rory once he hits that tee ball right. Mm-hmm. You just don't know if he's going to be able to execute that shot. So it was compelling in a lot of different ways, but the flow of it felt odd, or there was more. I remember last year, and last year's of course different because you're watching a guy try to win the Masters for the first time, a guy who you want to win the Masters so bad, and he's clearly suffering through the mental burden of that. And I don't know, maybe part of the weird, you know, mental feeling I had around it is like, I'm not going to feel that bad for this guy if he doesn't win this Masters, which sounds insane to say out loud, but it's really like, he already got over the hump last year. And so if he collapses, like, yeah, it's going to be tough. And yeah, it will have been given away a 6-shot lead he had on Friday night, but he's going to be okay. Like, this won't be another chapter in like the gut wrenching Rory McIlroy history. And if the next person wins at one point, it's like, it's Justin Rose, who probably, you know, deserves a career Masters, a career green jacket on resume. I don't know. How did you have a similar feel in the way it unfolded on Sunday?
Well, there were just so many.
That's another word.
there was just so many storylines to try to figure out, because all it takes is one shot to be the reason why somebody gets back into a contention. Mm-hmm. You know, could it be a second shot from Justin Rose on a par five at number two? Like, that could be the shot. So you feel like you have to keep telling the story of all of these players just in case. And the last thing you want to do is have to kick somebody from coverage, and next thing you know, they end up winning. I think with Scottie today, you know, it's with him being, you know, four or five groups in front and getting off to that quick start and then getting on that par wall and feeling like, all right, you're just waiting for Scottie to kind of make that run. And so you have to keep cutting over there, but you never feel like you got into a normal flow with Scottie and just kind of like sitting with him, because most of the time you're getting to watch him live, but it felt like when he's out in front, you know, you're just kind of cutting to him a little bit more. Meanwhile, you got your lead group and your other groups like Rose, who's got the lead, 2-shot lead at one point. Cam Young's got a 2-shot lead at one point. And then Rory McIlroy, you know, comes off that double and you're like, okay, well, we're going to have to wait on him. We have to document everything with Rory, of course. So there's only so many cameras and so much that you can do. That's sometimes. Right. And it felt like today it was tough to cover all of those stories.
Well, you have Tyrrell Hatton throwing his hat in the ring.
I know, because you got to finish
these. Under.
You just don't know if Rory's going to screw up. You don't know if Cam, if everybody hits in the water at 12. Next thing you know, like, you got to make sure that you get Hatton all the way through the finish. So producing television is hard, man. And especially when you have crazy days that you don't expect. And with leaders, you know, making bogeys down the stretch. So it did feel like it had a very awkward flow to it today. But, you know, last year was such a roller coaster, much more about Rory McIlroy just not trying to give it up. So you could really, really just like sit down with that, right? Where today you didn't have that option. You had to just go shot to shot, cut around all over the golf course, and which made it all over the place in your brain trying to figure out who's going to win this tournament. And sometimes I would get lost on who was winning.
That was like you'd be cutting over to someone who had like a good score in an absolute sense, but you're like, but they're still 3 or 4 shots off the lead. You know, why are we seeing this person? It's like, well, they've made 3 or 4 birdies in a row and they're showing no signs of slowing down. So we might need to log the fact that Tyrrell Hatton or Colin Morikawa or Russell Henley is heating up, because if they do end up winning, we have to show them on coverage. I'm curious too. We've got a mic for Jackson here. We got a mic for Brian. Jackson, first time, you know, being amongst the media members. Just your thoughts on like the week itself. You found some good spots to watch the golf. What was it like?
Well, they obviously pick this weekend of the year on purpose. Like, I mean, the weather itself was just, I'm from Minnesota, coming down here, just like every day, perfectly, you know, between 75 and 85 degrees, just impeccable. We found some, Brian and I found some incredible spots to watch golf. Obviously, last year only got to come for one day, so didn't get to, you know, see the course in its entirety. So we found some really cool spots to watch, some incredible golf. Like you were saying, because there were so many different storylines, we felt like we could just bop around to different holes mm-hmm. here and there and see incredible shots, incredible stories throughout the entire time. It's like unlike any other place.
Question absolutely for you. Incredible. You know, being from Minneapolis, really mm-hmm. cold winter, a lot of snow. Do you think you've shoveled more snow more than 50% of the days of 2026 or less than 50%?
Well, it's less, but the weight that my plastic shovel from Walmart has endured this year has been crazy. A lot of wet, thick snow.
Okay.
The back is suffering.
So with that being said, a week like this, does that make up for a cold winter in Minneapolis or no?
Oh man, I wouldn't say it makes up for it, but does it negate it at all?
Is it
slightly? I mean, it. When I left last week, it was raining and snowing. So, I mean, yeah, can't.
Guys got the itch.
Oh, I got the itch.
It's like you're making a birdie after a double. You got one back, but you still made a double.
Before you know it, the mosquitoes will be back out again.
That's right.
Have you tried lighting the snow on fire?
I don't know how that works scientifically. I don't know if that's a thing.
A lot of scientific questions we've done around the show this week, and I'm happy to answer any and all or most of them. How about Brian over there who got us some candy bars? We ate his children's candy bars. he built us this beautiful studio here. What are your thoughts on the week, Brian?
I almost had a disaster happen on 4.
Oh, man.
So Ludwig puts it in the bunker. I'm standing there with Jax. Don't know what I'm doing. I drop my beer, literally full spill
in his back.
Sounds, just about moments before. Thank God. It sounded like a gunshot went off, hit the ground. Everyone's looking at me.
And
like,
Ludwig's over the golf ball?
Yeah, he's literally he's over the golf ball. And I'm just like, oh my. He didn't swing yet. So it was moments away.
If it would have happened during his shot, the best thing about the Masters app is we could have gotten back and watched and see Brian just with two hands being like,
he also forgot.
They cut away to Brian.
He also forgot to mention the beer was 80% full. Yeah. I mean, like, we had just gotten it, dude.
Did it feel like everybody on Sunday kind of had a little clumsiness to him of the Patriots?
I think so. I don't know.
There was somebody sneezed in the back of Rory's backswing.
Was that 15 or was that 13 for Rory?
That was 13. He had stepped off and then Rose had told somebody on 17 while he's backing out of the shot. Hey, whoa. There was more of that on Sunday. Yeah. So I think everybody needs maybe a little bit of boot camp for the Patriots before they head back to Sunday.
The patron fatigue was real. Yeah. It was people were tired out there laying down.
How many steps?
Oh, I mean,
25,000
a day. Yeah. Like we got at least 100,000 in just from tournament days. I'd say with us out there in the practice rounds, I might have hit 125.
Okay.
Like,
I want to tread carefully here, but on the patron thing, like we're creeping up to some lines here. We're creeping up some lines on certain things.
Mm-hmm.
We might be in a hashtag shrink situation. All right. Some of the merch haul things that are going on. I'd say this is someone who did a merch haul video for the show this week. So maybe look at me too. We got to take a look at Charlie Hume's press badge.
Technically,
look
in the mirror. You are a problem.
I might be a problem. I might be part of the problem.
Raccoon time.
But there's a little coverage.
You have some class with your merch haul.
That's right.
Which I think is important note here.
I appreciate that. It's big of you to note that. So thanks for noting that. Yeah, I just think that we're at a real inflection point. I say that as someone who loves this tournament dearly, and I only want the best things for it, and I only want the best image for it. But there are rumblings about just the way patron behavior, the way that it's being broadcast earlier in the week. I just think we need to take a long, hard look in the mirror and say, what do we want the Masters tournament to be? What does it historically represent? How do we want to surround it with the content we make? This is why it's a look in the mirror moment for me too.
I think I'll
do that. I promise to do that.
We need to get a big board together. Yeah. And I think anything that has a sandwich on the hat needs to be done.
It's gone.
Pimento. Egg salad.
Skip it.
Skip it.
Bop it.
Yeah.
I mean,
no more of that.
No more of that.
I mean, I can get behind Amen Corner. Sure. If that's on your hat, that's fine. Not for me. I would actually suggest you to not ever do that.
Please.
But
please,
I'm okay with that much more than I am pimento. and trust me, I am putting myself on a pimento ban for the next 2 weeks when I get home. And my lovely little 3-year-old daughter loves pimento. And I'm going to have to tell her, no, none for daddy. I've had enough.
You know what? I will say, if they ever put a hat out that had like the wrapper on the front and said candy bar on it, I'd buy that hat. I mean, just as a bit, I don't know if I'd wear it anywhere like publicly, but yeah. I mean.
All right. So now we're here on the candy bar. We've kind of done all of these things. What if you had to pick one item from the Masters, whether it be a concession, whether it be a beverage, a merch item, give me your favorite Masters purchase from this year.
From this year, ranking all of them.
Could be apparel, could be a gnome, could be an accessory.
Okay, well,
could be a poncho that you never used.
I have a simple answer for mine while you stew on yours.
Please.
I'm so in on the chicken salad sandwich. Like, I think I had 14 of them.
I never had one this week.
Chicken salad's great. It's great.
Man, I went a whole year without a chicken salad sandwich.
I got some merch. I got some other things, but that was a consistent go-to for me all week.
Chicken,
that's my number
chicken
one.
Chicken salad feels like it gets overlooked a little bit.
I think so.
Against the egg salad and so you feel like you got to do pimento or egg salad. Then once you get into chicken salad world, you're like, why haven't I been living here this whole time?
That's right. Brian found a good one today too. What was your find, Brian?
Oh, what did I have?
The barbecue sandwich.
Oh yeah, barbecue sandwich quality. Actually pretty good. Add a little barbecue on there, a little hot sauce.
Can you believe that we almost had raccoon time today with two tomato pies, but for some crazy reason, Ryan didn't want to carry around two Hot Pockets in his backpack from 9:30 a.m. on the rest of the day. I can't imagine why. I can't imagine why he wouldn't want to do that. Like, but that's why we're not doing raccoon time with the tomato pie.
It's a shame. That's a shame. Shame on you, Ryan.
Charlie almost made him do it.
No. That was a fair rejection.
Yeah, I didn't feel like that was a good time frame. I thought we were going to come back. I actually do have a regret, though. I didn't eat the peach, Georgia peach. I'll get to it. That's we'll come back on the
regret.
Way. So
we might have to do biggest regret segment too.
Yeah, I think that's mine.
Okay, let's file through our best purchase though. So give me your best purchase.
Man. Oh, well, I guess this is a utility purchase. So I for whatever reason, didn't buy or bring a belt on this trip. So I get down here and I've been using Jackson's belt since day one. So and I also went into the merch like three other times before I got the belt. So
he wins merch of the year on the Smile Show.
I went crazy.
Four times.
I went crazy. Four times. No, three times.
No, wow. we're counting our final one today. Okay.
So two today?
You went twice today, man.
That's true. I got the jute bag or whatever it is. Yeah. No, that's right. You're right. I did make a purchase.
Wow. Okay. Charlie?
So I'll say, I think I'm going to go sentimental here. It's the hat I got Kadick. She really wanted a hat. Every time I saw her on FaceTime this week, she said, hat. So it's that little azalea hat that I got her. But I will say, the candy bar was a second. It was a close second. Candy bar was good.
Is this terrible that I'm between cold beer and a barbecue sandwich right now?
That's the most American thing you've ever said on this show.
I tell you.
Cold beer and barbecue. Come on now.
The sandwich that Fran created with the barbecue cup with the pimento cheese was something from a movie. I mean, I wore it yesterday on the show. I mean, I got barbecue sauce all over me. And so I'm trying to think, was that first bite of that better than the first sip of that cold beer? And I am so torn.
I'll tell you what, this is coming from the same woman who brought us redneck charcuterie on the show, which is a staple. Kameka sausage. Fran knows her way around a good sporting event snack. So
I only had two bites of this, and it's going to be my answer.
I love that.
That's I only had two bites of it. Now that was a terrific cold beer. It was an 8.8 as far as cold beers go. Yeah. So maybe if it had crept up to 9.0, then we would have been there. But man, what a first couple bites.
Okay, so then do you want to reverse snake this and tell us what your biggest regret is this week?
Okay, biggest regrets of something I didn't purchase. Well, I didn't really ever go to merge. I went with Fran.
Well, it didn't necessarily have to be merch. It could just be just anything in general. Just your biggest regret of the week.
Well, I didn't get to try the chicken salad sandwich. And so that kind of rings in my head. But also, I must say the tomato pie, there's a bit of just, yeah. I don't want to call it regret, but more so I'm thinking about her,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm thinking that's about fair. Her.
Yeah. It's a tough one to leave behind. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My biggest regret, it's definitely not getting to sleep early on Saturday night. That was one of the best things I did all trip long. So we're not
Irish. Charlie Irish goodbyed us last night.
Shout out to T-Bones, by the way.
That's right. Shout out to yeah, Josh and Jacob and T-Bones. They took great care of us this week, even though we could not do our show. I hope we can rectify
that. No, they took care of us.
Yeah.
No, that's right. No. I got taken care of early in the week, too.
That's right.
He went to T-Bones?
Yeah. Yeah, I went to T-Bones. You think I was going to come here and not go to T-Bones?
Well, kind of thought you didn't.
Did you check? Did you?
This gentleman went to Cookout and went and got a milkshake instead of joining the fellas on a Saturday night in Augusta, Georgia. Shame this man.
Okay, my tummy was hurding. All right. First of all, it's been a rough week.
If you have a tummy hurting, who goes and gets a milkshake?
Well, because it was a science equation. All right. My tummy hurt because of the sour mix and the margaritas that we drank that they basically served to us in a cereal bowl. And so then I had to bounce that out with a pH, with a basic component, and that was the Oreo peanut butter milkshake at Cookout.
Again, this is not a math pod because this is not adding up.
That's a science.
You know, the old tried and true method of, you know, fixing your stomach ache with dairy.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know about that one. That's a free tip. You guys can take that one. I think my biggest regret this week is going to be, I don't know that I had many regrets. I feel like, you know what I wish we would have done more of? We did it one day. We went in that bleacher on 17 mm-hmm. where you can see T-balls on eight and receives on 17. And with our press badges, we could get up on like that top vantage point. There was a nice breeze kind of blowing through. Yeah. But see, the thing is, it's so I regret not doing more of that. But we also found some like killer watch spots this year.
Oh, me too.
Oh, dude, right side of three.
Incredible.
So I think right side three might be the best because they push it so far up off the tee that you can see what they're doing with their approach out there. And we saw like three different trajectories on Saturday. One guy went high, one guy went mid, one guy went low, kind of bumped in the front. You can see how they're manipulating their wedges, what they're trying to do, and then you can see their putts, and then you get to see them at tee balls.
Did anybody hit a wedge shot into three this week, by the way?
What do you mean? Like a
did
full
we,
wedge?
Did we see anybody lay up and hit a wedge into three?
I think Aaron Ryan
was way back there. Yeah.
Yeah. He played with Bridgman. Yeah. It was that Saturday, right?
Man, yeah. That's kind of interesting. You know, it's such a heavily debated hole on what to do. And I think we've learned that these guys are just going to pound it up there and they just chip it up.
We saw a lot of guys down left today, really struggling. Ball coming back to their feet after they went down left with driver. It's an interesting.
P Reed bump one into the apron today that came back down. Mm-hmm. Ludwig, you guys saw that great shot where he got up and incredible. Down short sided over that bunker. Yeah, I thought that was a great spot. 10. I mean, 10 might be my favorite.
10's incredible.
Hole on the golf course.
It's so good, dude. It's that such green, a good hole. When you're up there by that green, you don't know if it's uphill or downhill.
Right.
It's impossible. You stand behind that green. And you think, is this green pitched back or is it pitched to me? 100%. And then you stand on the front of the green, you're like, oh, this green's uphill. I'm telling you, it's the most bizarre green in the world because you're going, you're trying not to fall over on your face walking down the hill. And then you get to the green, you're like, is this putt uphill? Wait, it should be downhill, right? It's. I think one of the best built greens at Augusta.
Well, and I just love how that hole shapes, like the huge elevation change sweeping right to left down the hill. And then when you watch it on TV, you don't understand that how much space is between that last elevated fairway bunker and the huge dip behind that bunker coming up to the front of that green. Mm-hmm. And the way that's protected from like shots that are short rolling back down, you're dead if you're mm-hmm. long left. And then the bunker on the right side, I think that hole, so Brian and Jack said a lot of like hanging out behind 10, watching the way that hole was played. I thought that was awesome.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America.
discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Seven is such a good spot, but it's so hard to get a good spot and get in there early because everyone's already there. Like
seven is really good. I think it's almost cats out of the bag. Everyone knows seven because you can see tee shots at eight, but nobody
three two isn't three tucked right there. Three's right off that.
You can see tee shots at three two. Eight, you can kind of see some things that happen over at two shots from the top of the hill.
Yeah.
And it feels like you're too close to the action at seven almost. Like it feels like, wait, am I inside the rope line? Like, no, I'm good. Like this is how they have it roped off. The next topic I want to get into, I want to talk about Augusta National, the golf course. And how did it play? Did they get it right? And there's a couple holes that I want to kind of get into that I got to observe on Amen Corner. I want to talk about 11 and 13 because 11 to me, we didn't see nearly amount of golf balls that hit the mounds that get down into the water. Yep. Last year, there was talks that they changed the mounding to make it to where golf balls were going to hit the mounds a little bit more severe this year and really work themselves into the water. On a firm and fast year, I saw about every shot on Amen Corner, and I didn't see one golf ball hit the mounds and go into the water. Mm-hmm. And so the other part of it too is that I saw way too many golf balls at 11 not hit the mound and scoot down further away from the green. I saw so many players putting it from just off the green at 11, which I'm not going to say I was upset with how hole 11 played this week, but I want to see more players have to chip at 11. I want to see less players being able to take the putter out. And so how do you do that? You have to make that golf ball work further away. And it just didn't play nearly as firm as I thought it was going to.
I think that's going to be one of the big debate points coming away from this is like, did it get too hard on Thursday, too firm, too fast, too baked out, and did the pendulum swing too far back in the other direction the rest of the week? I mean, Friday and then even Saturday.
It's debatable, man. Like,
because you wonder what, when we were talking about it as we were walking around on Saturday, And we were seeing Rory, you know, kind of let players back into the tournament. You know, part of our takeaway was, man, we are watching shots early in the coverage where it's definitely softer and balls were bounding over on Thursday or holding greens and giving those players opportunities for birdies or eagles. So in the competitive structure of the tournament, in that sense, it was good to keep the tournament interesting. But I wonder if you would have gotten that same outcome anyway with a lower winning score and just a more interesting tournament.
Right.
Like, it's clear that Augusta National has a preferred way they want the golf course to play. When you get a week with no rain, you can push it, but it feels like they don't want to live in U.S. Open territory, understandably, right? But it would have been interesting to see if they would have let it go a little bit more. How would that have felt, you know?
I think that Sunday played perfectly. I thought today, the way the golf course played, the way it looked, having some brown show up on the green at 15, just starting to see that firmness that we expected kind of come back late in the day. I thought Thursday, the hole locations are a little tough. And if you played in the afternoon, you were at a disadvantage. And I think Rory's round of the week, shooting 567, had a share for the lead after that Thursday round, having an early tee time, I think was a big advantage for him. And was it the reason why he won this week? No, but on the most difficult day of the week where the scoring average was the highest, he had his best round in the lowest round. So it just is a interesting debate because I think 13-2 was, you know, you saw Phil Mickelson tweet about 13 about how on Saturday only six players putted for eagle. But when you go and look at the stats at 13, I was blown away, especially with there being less than 50% of the players that had an opportunity to go for the green through the first 3 days, only 42% of those players were actually going for it. So why was that? Well, I think the first couple days having a northeast wind, the golf ball wasn't going quite as far. So they were in this, I would say maybe 240-ish range. So the difference between 240 and 220 on this shot is monumental. Going from a long iron to a hybrid seven wood situation, some players say, you know what, if it's anything more than a four iron, I'm not going, I'm just going to lay it up. And so you saw 58% of the players just lay it up. But what I also found interesting was that before today, only a quarter of those players were actually finding the green of the players that actually went for it. So was it worth the risk of going for it if you're only ending up on the green 25% of the time? So I think they're going to heavily evaluate the data at 13 to figure out how they can get more players going for the green for two, because you saw a lot more of it today. And the reason why was it was more of a south wind today. So you were getting a little bit more help where players could push driver a little bit further. We saw Rory get to 200 yards or something. You saw some guys hit three wood and be able to hit iron on the green. We didn't see any of that over the first couple of days. So do you attribute to the wind, or do you attribute to is the hole playing maybe a little bit too long? I think they're going to heavily study it because they want people going for that green in two. And I thought maybe there was not enough of it this week, but we did get to witness, I think, a incredible wedge shot. We don't normally get to see it at 13, but we got to see a lot of it this week.
And that's what I thought for me, for the people who are critiquing it, saying, you know, you're taking the excitement out of it. With the firmness we saw from 13 and 15 green this week, I did not think that that wedge shot was a slam dunk.
It's so hard.
And I also thought that the testament to that was all the different ways we saw guys hit it in terms of trajectory and spin, what they were trying to achieve. You know, and obviously that changed with wind directions as well and wind strength. But I still found that to be a very compelling watch, all those wedge shots. So it wasn't like I was like, oh, this is so boring that it's going to wedge it in tight and make birdies. Like, that was not a foregone conclusion. And I think we saw a lot of, you know, sometimes with wedges, but for the players that did go for it in two, long at 13 off the fringe was a big puzzle that not many solved.
Yeah. And it was hard to get there.
We saw Ludwig chip into the creek. We saw Hautong put it into the creek today from the back of that green.
We got to talk Hautong, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of our boy. I mean, first of all, can we just say, like, Hautong Lee is our boy. We love Hautong Lee so much.
He's kind of ours, right?
I don't want to be like selfish, but I feel a little bit of ownership over Hautong, because when we brought him on the show and we talked to him, that's one of the first English language, like, full interviews I've seen Hautong do. And he was delightful. And we love him so much. And
we can't get him back on soon enough.
We cannot. No. I'd have him on every week if we could.
And how many people said on socials and replying to our videos and stuff like that all week, like, oh, my gosh, I didn't know I was a fan of Hautong until I saw these clips.
We might have to send him a tripod so it helps Jackson with not having to deal with him just like throwing with his camera being out in
bed,
everywhere.
Like in his hotel bed.
That was I kind of added a little bit of the charm.
It did.
For me, but I think
one of the clunkiest parts about today, though, Charlie, was trying to figure out, I was like, wait, Scotty hadn't putted yet at 13? And then, like, it felt like forever for him to putt. It's like, gosh, man, they're way behind on Scotty here. And it's like, nope. Scotty, Hautong has just made a 10 at 13. We're like, what happened?
Yeah. And there was a great image that Hautong reposted, I believe, on Instagram, where it's like art or sports but make it art. And it's like him set way back into like the pine straw and the native flowers at Augusta National at 13.
Absolute cinema.
And you know what? You know what? This is the only thing I need to see to feel like whether or not I feel good about talking about this right now, is that when he shook Scotty's hand on the 18th green, he had a huge smile on his face.
They're both smiling.
He played with them at the Open too. Like, Hautong is just, he is good for the game of golf.
Was it good for Scotty on Sunday?
I was going to ask that.
I don't think it was.
Yeah.
I do not think it was whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, what, let me ask you this. Our boy's
a loose cannon out there.
He is a little bit of a loose cannon. Let me ask you this, though. Like, obviously, and we've seen a number of examples of this, you know, at various levels. Like, we've talked about most recently this year, Michael Thorbjørnsen, the final group with Ludvig Åberg at the Players. You know, we've talked a couple years back about Victor Hovland in the final group with Rory McIlroy at the Open Championship that Cam Smith ended up winning, playing alongside Cam Young. And just like, you know, if you have someone who's kind of pulling you down a little bit or just not playing well, it's hard to get going. How much of a internal, you know, amongst group text type of grudge would a player hold against someone like that, knowing they're still trying their best to play well and win money? But is there ever any residual, like, man, this guy kind of hosed me here type of feeling?
Yeah, I felt bad for Jordan on Sunday 10 years ago.
That was that. Those, I mean, like, that's actually, I mean, you know, how did
it, yeah, didn't, it didn't help him that the all the other guys he was playing against, you know, they're out in front, you know.
That's right.
I was hanging in there for a bit, and then all of a sudden I won. But that's how it goes.
Well, that's why I feel like most people know, like, hey, that's the feel. Like, it's hard to win a tournament, but it's just interesting.
It's just dynamic. More so the long delays.
Yeah.
You just don't want to be in a situation that happened like Fitzpatrick at Valspar, where Fitzy's trying to make a run and the guy you're playing with is, it feels like, isn't ready to play.
And that seems to be the greater offense.
Yeah.
Hao Tongli was making a God's honest effort to get the golf ball in the hole. And by golly, it was really hard today.
That's right.
And that's the right. Masters.
So, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Man, that feels like we did a pretty comprehensive Masters recap. What else are we forgetting? Jax, any other questions? Anything else we missed?
No, not too much. We've covered a lot. Does Cam Young win his first major in 2026? We talked about this earlier.
I had him penciled for Onomate. That was the one I picked for at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. Just felt like I needed to do it. And luckily enough for me, I still got Rory on the big board after the withdrawal at Bay Hill. So I still got him in the back pocket as well as Scotty. So I love him. I love him to win something at the end. One of these majors, he's going to win. I don't know which one, but he's going to win one.
Do you think if he's driving her accurately at Shinnecock,
Dude, he drives it accurately everywhere.
But I mean, like, knowing that's a very exacting, that test when they bring the rough in there. Like, if he's in the fairway there at his lengths, I mean, we might see an absurd low number.
Home game-ish to
home
there.
Game, for sure.
Boy. The Newark crowd's going to bring Cam Young home.
Oh, yeah.
Battling Scottie Scheffler, trying to win the Grand Slam.
Wow.
These stories write themselves, folks.
Wow. We love to see it. Man. What a fun week. What a fun week with the boys together here in Augusta. Jax and I had a little bit of FOMO leaving the Sunday scariest things.
Only other quick note I got.
Okay, what do you got?
Didn't notice this, but Rory McIlroy, he birdied a third of the holes this week.
I think that usually helps.
24 birdies.
That usually helps.
That is insane. Does that even make sense? Yeah. He had 24 birdies.
Yeah.
8 bogeys, 2 doubles. How many Masters champions have had 2 doubles in a week? I know Rory probably did it last year.
He did. We had 4 last year.
He had 4 last year. Yeah. I guess I don't know what the average would be for double bogeys, but of, let's see, how about this? I got to scroll all the way down to Victor Hovland, who had 3, and he's an 18th, but 17 other players had 1 double or less on the top of the leaderboard. Rory has 2, and is in a similar bogey average as everybody else and still finds a way to win by 1.
That's what I think the thing about him is, that he does take you on a little bit of this roller coaster ride where you're like, he'll make a big number today. You know, I'm like, how in the heck he missed a shorty for bogey at 4. And you're like, is he really going to do this to us again? But he just has, maybe more so than anyone else in the field, the highest upside,
right?
You know, the highest ability to go out and make a birdie or an eagle. And he's never really out of it.
All right. So a little roundtable question for everybody here. All right, how many more birdies did Rory have in Scottie Scheffler this week? Let's take this around town.
Okay.
He won by 1.
Won by 1. And
Rory had 24.
And then Scottie was bogey free on the weekend. I'm going to guess he had 12 more birdies than Scottie.
Okay.
I'm going to say 8 more.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say I'll go with 9. I'll split.
There you go.
Charlie got it right. It was 12.
Wow. Oh,
good one.
12 more birdies.
That's incredible.
That's wild.
And only 1 by 1.
Shot difference.
Yeah.
That's crazy, right?
How about Scotty just bogey free on the weekend?
I know.
Pretty dang impressive.
I know. I'm just blown away by 12 more birdies.
Yeah.
That's a lot of offense. My goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not completely accurate now. Scotty had 2 eagles. Now that adds up.
That does it.
Now that's starting to add up, guys.
Sorry,
stats.
That's all right.
Well, I mean, the question still stands. Yeah, how many more birdies do you have?
Yeah.
It's not wrong.
All right. Not a stats pod.
Apologies.
Not a science pod. Not math and stats, probably same. But, you know, we are a pod that had a heck of a week here. And we're going to do it again soon. We're going to do it again.
From Brian and I think I can speak for him. Thank you guys so much for giving us this opportunity.
No, thank you, Jax. Thank you, Brian.
Incredible place and incredible group of men here. So thank you, guys.
I felt like I was in the locker room, North Dakota State. Baby.
That's right.
Incredible group of men right
here. Go Bison.
Go Bison.
That's right. Go Bison.
Go Bison.
That's how we're ending.
That's how it ends. Go Bison.
Roll herd.
Only other quick hitter was, man, Max had a great week. Jake Knapp had a good week. Jordan ended up having a good week. Mm-hmm. The only other players we met, I mean, Russell Henley made his run. Tyrrell Hatton made his run. Other than that,
yeah.
Congrats to Rory McIlroy, man.
And
second
we have
green jacket.
Golly, let's look at this right now. We have 1, 2, 3, 4 events until the next major, the PGA Championship.
Bada bing, bada boom.
RBC Heritage, Zurich Classic, Cadillac Championship, and the Truist Championship. Back-to-back signatures heading into the PGA. So we're heading a nice little stretch of golf. We're about to be playing some golf. I got a tee time tomorrow, Broomsedge.
7 weeks in a row for me, buddy. I'm excited to be home.
Do your mobility work. Yeah, that's right. Good to get home. We appreciate you tuning in all weekend long on YouTube, the social content. It's been always fun for us to put that in front of you all, and it means the world to us, the way you all support us all in these major weeks. And
if you made it this far, make sure you subscribe. We're trying to get to, I think, 20K.
Oh, wait, we might have got there. I can check.
Oh, this is the big reveal. Did we get to 20K this week? We're about to find out.
I got it.
What is it? What is it? What is it?
Oh, my gosh. 19999. Somebody subscribe right now, please. All right,
I'll subscribe.
Can we just say that we hit 20?
Yeah.
By the time this comes out, we're hitting 20.
Somebody make an account.
Yeah, someone make an account right now. I mean, by the time you get there and make this, we'll probably got 20. And that, again, is a thanks to you all, our audience. Yeah. We'll not be able to do this without your support. So stay tuned. We got next week, we've got a little bit of RBC Heritage content. We're going to take a little bit of a break post-Masters and then get back into it, recapping all the action.
We stay grinding, bro. We stay grinding.
We do stay grinding.
That's right.
So thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Thanks for chiming in. We'll talk to you back here very soon.
We'll see you next week on the Golf Channel. This has been The Smiley Show.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too, so please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the...
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America. Discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.